name's Randy Wilkins. Thanks for coming today. Hopefully you'll get a little bit out of this. I guess we'll see. Just so you know, in the interest of being transparent, I did a session earlier today and I had it all on PowerPoint. We got through it, but we're not going to use PowerPoint this time. We're going to do it a little bit different. Really, what's this all about? Real quick about my background. I spent 35 years in the human resource field. A lot of that was leadership, interpersonal skill, training and development, teams, those kinds of things. So it's a little bit what, and really, it turns out part of my passion in life is about, one, having dialogue with people, and two, helping relationships grow and develop. And figuring out how to do that better. And I've had a lot of experience in doing it badly. So hopefully I've learned a couple of things in the process, and those are some of the things that I want to share with you. And maybe if you walk away with nothing else, you walk away with a couple of subtle tools that you can use to build relationship as opposed to tearing it apart. Okay? The myth in communications is that all of us are gifted, most of us are gifted at birth and as we develop with the ability to communicate at some level, right? And some of us stay at that level, and some of us choose to learn additional skills to make us more effective in the communications field. And that's really what I want to talk about. The myth in communications is, we live in a world where we primarily live in assumption-based communications. So, and it's beginning to happen right here, right now. And how does assumption-based communication work? Works this way. And I can see it in your faces already. And it is, you're listening to me, you're hearing some words that I'm saying that are coming out of my mouth, and we are beginning to build a story about those words. Yeah? Now, I, on the other side of it, am sitting here looking at you and saying some words, and none of you are talking. But I'm beginning to build my own story about you guys. Well, here's the problem. You don't know what my story is. And I don't know what your story is. Yeah? You agree?
Yeah.
So how do we go about, and this is really about how we build relationships, right? We build relationships through having dialogue and being effective in the way we have those conversations. And when we do that, if we do it like we're doing right now, we're making a lot of guesses based on the assumptions that we're making by what we see and what we hear. So I'm going to share my story with you, right? Just based on this first 3 minutes of conversation. I look out at you, and I see you sitting there, and I see you looking at me, and I see you engaged or arms crossed or sitting open, and I can begin to make some educated guesses about what's going on in your head. Yeah? So I'm making educated guesses. At the moment, I'm thinking you're a little bit intrigued, maybe a little interested. It's enough to start off with to hold you. However, if I continue in the same tone of voice for a long period of time, you're probably going to go away. But you don't know what the story is going on in my head. Okay? And here's the story that's going on in my head. The story that's going on in my head is, number one, I tried something different this morning, and it wasn't as effective as I'd like it to be. So I'm trying something different with you guys. So there's an element of risk here on my part, because I'm not using a PowerPoint presentation. I don't have a handout for you. So I better be darn good, right?
No, I'm cold.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not a problem. And And how do I know that unless you tell me? That's a great example of telling me your story. Okay? And I just told you my story. So I'm going to back up a little bit. Over here, this is really what we're focusing on today. The story, the risk, the safety, and the tools. And this, when you walk out the door, before you walk out the door, I'll explain this and maybe a little bit of a framework for you to be able to use when you walk out. Okay? How many of you have ever had a pair of dice in your hands? Good. A good number of you. How many of you have ever shaken your hands like this and rolled the dice? A good number of you. Now the next piece, you don't have to stick your hand. How many of you have ever played the game of craps? A good number. And what's craps about? What's the game of craps about? It's a game of chance. In order to do what? You're taking chances in order to do what? Win some money. Yeah. And you can win it every time. Every time you roll the dice, you can win it. And you do. Maybe. If you're lucky. Okay. So it is a game of chance. And almost everybody has the basic skill to be able to throw a pair of dice. Right? How do you get good at chance? The game of chance. How do you get good at craps? The game of craps. You watch. You watch and learn. What do you learn? How do you play? In other words, you have to learn the odds. You learn what's the appropriate betting strategy. You learn when to place the bet, when to back off. You learn when to come in on a hot streak and when to stay out on a cold streak. You learn, right? Do you win every time? Still don't win every time. Is there any way to win every time? There, my friends. That may be true. There, my friends, you are wrong. You can win every time in craps. Did you know that? Every single time you throw a pair of dice, you can win. There are two ways. Do you know what they are? Who said it?
Cheat.
Cheat. How do you cheat? Fixed dice, loaded dice, right? So you throw them and they roll seven or whatever every time. You can win that way, right? Any risk to that? What's the risk? You can end up dead, especially in some places, right? There's also another way. There's a way that if you go out and Google, I'm sure you can find it, that if you hold the dice and throw them in a certain way, it will increase your chances of winning every time. You may not win every time, but you'll get much better at the skill of throwing those dice. Okay. What does craps have anything to do with communication? The analogy is that communication is much like the game of craps. Right? We're all given, for the most part, a basic skill and ability to communicate. Yes? If we want to, we can get better at communication, right? And we can get better at it by learning all of the stuff that comes into play in communication. The tools, language, when to use it, how to use it, all those kinds of things, right? And much like the game of craps, in the game of communication, you can load the dice. Really? Can you load the dice? You can load the dice so well that you can win at the game of communications. That's a good thing, right? You can, and I'll phrase it slightly different. You can be more effective in the way you communicate. You can get better at the way you communicate. And I'll look at it like this. Communication really is about relationships. And it's about what is our ability to build relationships as opposed to our ability to tear relationships apart. And with communication, you can do both. Yes? Great. Okay. So, if we want to, if we're willing to take the risk of getting better, is the risk of getting better at communications? What's the risk? Yeah, absolutely. You got to practice. You got to put it. You got to figure it out. You got to learn the language. You got to learn when to use it. That kind of stuff, right? What else? Is there a risk of getting too good at communications? How can it hurt you? Being too honest. Another way it can be being too good at communications means that you understand the process of communication so well that you have the ability to influence people by manipulating them. Is there any risk there? People figure it out after a while. What is that old saying? You can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all of the people all the time. Sooner or later, it comes back to haunt you. And just like you were saying, and when you load the dice, use loaded dice, if you're so, and you throw it, and you do it in the wrong place, you can physically get hurt or killed. The same thing happens in communication. When you load the dice and do it so well that you manipulate people, sooner or later it causes death. It doesn't cause death in the physical sense or hurt in the physical sense. It causes death or hurt in the relational sense. You lose relationships. The risk is you lose relationships because people begin to figure out the game. Right? So we started off talking about the story process. You're still with me, I think. That's my story. Right. Where does stories come into play? So we talked about a number of things in both the communication and the crap side of it. We talked about learning tools, right? We talked about risk. What we're going to talk about is the whole story, the conversations that happen in the story. We're having a conversation of sorts. It's much more of a one-way conversation at the moment. It could be that whenever you have an answer or have a question, and please feel free to ask questions, as we go through this, it becomes much more of a dialogue. And really, building relationships is about the dialogue process. It's not about the superficial conversations that we have on a daily basis that kind of are 80% of what we do in our life, right? It is those moments where we need to have significant, substantial, oftentimes scary conversations. And therein lies this whole idea of the story process and how the story process becomes part of what we need to be aware of in order to build relationships. If we're in a... Let's come back to conversations and take it back to the risk. So we have stories going on in our head all the time. We get into a conversation. And that conversation is a conversation that we are having or need to have that has significant potential for conflict in it. Easy to do? You're shaking your head no. Why not? So, conflict is a challenge for all of us, right? And why is conflict a challenge? Good. What's the risk? The potential is to lose the relationship if you don't do it well, if it doesn't go well. Okay, so let's talk about risk for a minute. What does risk look like in our significant conversations or feel like? Losing? How does it feel like losing? That's the potential, right?
That's the potential of loss.
And how would that happen? Okay, yeah, the loss could be if it's significant enough, right? And why? What are the emotions that play a part in that?
Other people make judgment on your
okay.
information.
Okay, so here's the thing in that. In conversations, especially when there's significant emotion involved with it, and conflict has significant emotions that tie into it, Would you agree? When it has significant emotion involved with it, there's a big risk. And the big risk is that if I don't do it well, there's a potential for loss. Or there's a potential to begin the breaking of the relationship. So it behooves us to understand this whole nature of risk, right? And risk is emotion-driven stuff. And how do we know if there's risk going on? Well, generally speaking, when we go into a conversation that stirs up a lot of emotion, you can pretty well bet there's risk there, right? In that process, our guts come into play a lot. Some people call it intuition, but we know, generally speaking, when we're in a conversation and our gut is getting all wound up and all tight, that there's something that we need to be paying attention to. And here's what kind of happens in that process. If we don't think carefully about what's going on and what we are feeling, and I'll give you a model here in a little bit, it can have the ability to destroy the conversation. Right? And that's not where we want to be. How do we identify risk in conversations? Any ideas? Okay. So lots of things. Nonverbal communication is what you were just talking about. So nonverbal stuff, what else comes into play? How do you know if it's risky?
Nonverbal comes into play. Verbal comes
into play. Verbal comes into play. Oh, let's talk about verbal for just a minute. What's verbal? Is it just the word? What is it? What else? Tone? Timing? Body language that goes along with it? Volume, yeah? Anything else? Let's talk about another thing that is a risk builder. And oh, by the way, all this stuff begins to build. To build the story that's going on in my head when we're having conversations, right? And this is where the problems begin to develop, because what I say and what you see may not be the stories that are going on in my head, because we have a great ability to hide, right? The story that's really going on in my head is I'm getting angry, I want to get up and smash you in the face, I don't believe a word that you're saying. But that's not what's, okay, I'm sitting there, I'm listening. That's not what's coming out of my mouth, right? So the story process is about how do we get to a point where we understand the unspoken stories that are going along with the words and actions that are coming out of my mouth. And that's really the alignment of stories. How do you do that in a crucial conversation? Because there's a number of risks involved with that. First thing is, you gotta understand. There's a story going on, right? Right now, there's a story going on. You're either getting it, thinking it's good, or you're not. Whatever the story is, it's going on. And the only way that I know it is for us to do this. And I'm a terrible speller sometimes, so I may have spelled that wrong, but you get the point, right? We have to have dialogue around it. And now I'm going to give you a tool where you can find out. And actually, I've used it already here. That is the story process. That is this. I see it here. I think. I feel. I need help. Very simple tool. We're in a conversation. My gut's rolling. Something's going on. I can see by the tone of your body action, hear the tone change in your voice, the pitch is going up. I'm not sure exactly what it is. It's time for me to ask your story. Mark, what's going on in your head? Here's what I'm seeing. You're sitting there, your arms are like this, you're looking at me directly. I think you're doing this. You're paying attention and you're listening. Is that a correct story?
Yes.
Cool. If it's not a correct story, it gives you the opportunity to what? Tell me what the real story is, right? So it's, here's what I see and hear. When I see and hear those things, this is what I start to think like. When I start to think that way, I begin to feel this way. When I begin to feel this way, that's where I really need help. Because I don't want that to go further into action. What I want to understand is, or what I need help with, is what I'm seeing and hearing and the way I'm interpreting those things accurate. Is that your story? Is that the story that's going on in your head? Tell me the story that's going on in your head. And it'll either align or it won't. One way or another, it'll align because we've both got our stories out. The stories may not match. And here's the way I look at communications. Or communications, I'm a very visual person, being more effective. We communicate like this, right? Most of the time, we need to protect ourselves. And at a superficial level, there's always some level of defense going on in the way we communicate. And that's perfectly okay. That's totally acceptable. When we begin to introduce the element of risk or emotion into it, what begins to happen is this. And as we get more and more into the risk quotient, what happens is then we begin to communicate like this. And as we are communicating, it becomes less effective for us. Well, even standing here now, it's probably irritating some of you to see me communicating like this. Why?
It's harder to see your story.
It's harder to see the story. It's harder for me to make guesses about what's really going on. And we can make good, educated guesses if we really know each other pretty well, based on the verbs, the words we use, and the behavior that we exhibit. But guess what? Those are assumptions. And in really important conversations, it's much better if we verify our assumptions. So let's talk about risk a little bit more, and we're going to use it in relationship to safety. Okay. Is it a given, would you agree, that when we have significant conversations that involve tremendous amounts of emotion, there's going to be risk? Yes? You would agree with that, right? And if there's a ton of risk, this is often what happens, and then we become much less effective in the way we communicate. So I'm going to posit a theory. And that theory says that even in the middle of tremendous risk, if we provide safety for each other, we can have significant, blunt, direct, and imperfect communications. Okay? The question then becomes, how do we provide safety? In the middle of risk, in the middle when I am absolutely cranked and angry with my wife for something that she's done, how do I provide safety for her so that it builds our relationship, and this is the charge that I want. It builds our relationship, strengthens our relationship, and doesn't tear it apart. How do we do that?
Rules of engagement.
Rules of engagement. Wow. That's good. What does a rule of engagement mean? All right, I'll tell you. Rules of engagement means we have conversations that set up boundaries. Don't bring up the past if you've resolved those issues. So it's some people call it gunny sacking, right? It happened 20 years ago, we talked about it, we thought it was over, but I'm bringing it up and I'm going to beat you up with it. So that's one. What's another one?
No name calling.
No name calling. Why? Okay. And oftentimes, name calling happens when I'm hurt. You hurt me? You did something? Let me change that language. I was hurt because of something you did. And so my way of getting back at you is to name call or to throw a dart or to yell or to dismiss or to belittle or to denigrate, right? Because I'm one with it. That's my way of protecting. That's my button. Another one. So rules of engagement. What did we just say? You said, what was yours? Rules of engagement. And yours was name calling?
Name calling and bring up.
And bring up the past, okay. Any others that you can think of?
No yelling.
How do you not yell? It's hard sometimes, isn't it? So I'm going to take a slight detour, and I'm going to talk about how you get to the place where you can provide or help provide safety, okay? There's a process. I absolutely believe that if you are not aware of your own behavior and your own buttons, you can never have, never a good word to use, your effectiveness in the way you communicate is going to be compromised. So one of the first things that has to happen is self-awareness. And it looks a lot like this, okay? I have to look inside myself and understand who I am as a person and be honest about what my faults are, what my shortcomings are, what my strengths are, and about what my buttons are. What are my defense mechanisms that when somebody pushes them, I go whoosh. So self-awareness is a piece, right? Sometimes it's pretty difficult because then I have to admit that I'm wrong. The other piece that self-awareness is great. Another piece that has to come into play is, and we get to an intellectual age of maturity, is we begin to understand that we're not the only person in the world. And it's not about me. It's about us. And when it is about me, is because I know that my behavior impacts and influences other people. And I can make choices about whether that's in a good way or a bad way. And even in those moments where we don't think, where we react, it's still a choice. We chose that. Now, I've had to learn some very hard lessons in my life about my anger, right? And when I was a kid, I was a really pleasant and delightful young man, 95% of the time. That 5% was not good. And that 5% had a flash temper, not a big temper, not a consistent temper, but a flash temper. And the flash temper would happen in a way that would say, something happened, an input happened, and Randy responded. And when Randy responded, it was in a really ugly way. It was, at the time, over the years, I've called it berserker rage. Do you know what berserker rage is? What the old Vikings used to use to get themselves all ready for battle where they could go and kill and maim and destroy. They'd get into such a frenzy that they would not be consciously aware of what they were doing. Randy was like that in that 5%, right? That something would happen, he would get so angry, he'd kick in doors, he'd throw stuff through windows, he would beat his brothers up or try to. Some of them were bigger than him, so it wasn't always successful. But it, and it would be heated instantly, and just that quickly it would be gone. Luckily for Randy, when he was 21, was the last time he went into a berserker rage. And Randy remembers the exact moment that it stopped. It was as if God went into his brain and turned the switch, an audible click that said, that's done. Now, it doesn't mean Randy doesn't get angry or go get to that point, but he's never gotten to that point since the age of 21, where he's gone over the top of the ladder. When I look at this, this is the ladder. Generally, what happens is stuff happens, right? Life happens. Little thing. It's not the straw that broke the camel's back that kills you. It's the 150,000 straws before there that kills you. And it works you up until you get to the top of the ladder. And then something happens and you jump off the ladder. Right? And explode. The awareness piece says, not only do we have to understand our own behavior and understand that it has impact and influence on other people, and that though our behaviors can cause intimidation or fear or reactions to those, we also have to understand ourselves well enough to know that all of us have the ability to climb the ladder. All of us have the ability to jump off the ladder. And the trick of it is, how do we stop when we, how do we recognize and stop before we get to the top of the ladder? Here's where that comes into play. That's about behavior change. Right? I have, God gave us the ability to make choices. And when I begin to recognize that there's something that I'm doing that isn't productive, doesn't build, tears down, is negative, I make a choice. And the choice is, I can do something about it, or I continue in the same pattern. And if I continue in the same pattern, nothing changes. So, how does behavior change? Anybody have an idea? This is very general. Pardon? Empathy. Yeah, so you're saying understanding, right? Yes, but the physical process or the mental process that I have to do to change my behavior is really what I'm talking about. To change my behavior permanently. Okay? And it happens, I make a decision. Something happens, I recognize it's bad. I say, I want to change that behavior, and just like that, it's changed. Yes? Ah. So, and it is. It is. There's something happens. I recognize that I want to change it. Because it doesn't happen again immediately after there's a period of time where I go through before that certain set of circumstances happens again, and I go, oh, I wanted to change that behavior. Then the next time it happens, and hopefully it looks like this. It's a decreasing amount of time in between when I recognize I wanted to change that and me doing something to counteract it. Till we get to this place, I've gotten so good at recognizing that behavior that as soon as I start to do it, I can stop myself. Bingo, I'm good, right? Nah. There's another step in that process. Another step in that process is if it's stopping right here, it's still happening. How do I change that still happening piece? Pardon? Okay. And how do I do that? I begin to recognize and identify all of the patterns of behavior that lead me up to that place. Well, I get to here. Then it actually what happens is I stop it before it ever starts. And that comes back to this whole thing around, I have to know myself well enough to know what leads me up to that. What gets me to the place where it becomes, and really the way I'm looking at this is, where it becomes destructive or constructive. I don't don't want it to be destructive because I'm going to lose. And I'm all about winning. And I want us all to win. I want us both to win in the relationship. I don't want it to be a win-lose or a lose-win. I want it to be a win-win. So the challenge then becomes tools. Am I making sense so far? Okay. So let's talk about tools. It is tools that I can use walking out the door today and put into practice because it requires practice, as we know there, right? Here's two real simple tools. First one. Should actually be the other way. Here's what it just said. It's you versus I. Okay? What's your name back there, young man?
Ed.
Ed. Ed, forgive me for this example that I'm about to use. Ed, you really ticked me off. That was so stupid. Okay? Feel good?
No.
No. And in essence, what am I doing?
Blaming him.
I'm blaming him for the way I feel, for my anger. Right? It's really simple. It's really subtle stuff. Let's try this. We'll use this instead. Ed, I get really ticked off when you do this. What's the difference?
Now he knows.
Now he knows.
Sure.
I've identified something. What have I identified?
Well, you've taken responsibility for your feelings.
Okay. It was my anger. Right? I've done that. What else? So here's the subtle difference that we don't often think about between the word you and I, used in that context. You tick me off, not only blames you, but it goes to the center of who you are as a person. Because it's focusing on your inside, right? The difference with the way I said it with I get ticked off at that, is it takes it out of the focus of stabbing you in the guts and moves it over to a behavior that I have a problem with. Used in this context, I can use this as a model. Ed, when I see you doing, not getting your job done on time and having somebody else do it for you, I start to think that you're stuffing off your work. I start to get angry about that. You know what, though? I don't know the whole story, so here's what I need help with. Are you sloughing off your work? And if so, then we need to talk about that. So, Ed, are you sloughing off your work? It's subtle stuff, right? I mean, it's not huge, huge stuff. These are two words that are very... Another one. Ed, I'm going to continue to use you. You're doing so good, I'm going to continue to use you.
Can I do something different then?
Well, we'll see. All right. Great. I appreciate the fact that you're not sloughing off your work. But I think that you are still having some issues with doing it all yourself. Okay? But comes into play there. Or, let's see if I can follow this through. I still think that maybe you're not doing all of your work. And if you could tell me why you're not doing it, or what's not getting done, or the reasons around it, it would help me much better. So, and maybe that wasn't a good example.
Was you're helping me in the second situation, the first
okay.
situation.
Okay. So two small, three-letter words, but and and, right? But is a tear-down word, and is a building word. Of course, you have to think carefully about the words that you put around those two words, right? If you notice, the and generally needs to be followed up by something that builds the relationship. It's like you get called in your boss's office at performance review time, right? The boss says, you did a really good job with this piece of your job, but...
I
right? It feels a bit like sometimes like you're getting stroked so you can get nailed. Yeah? Rather than you do a really good job in this part, and now here's where the thought process comes into play about the other word, and if you would do these things as well as you do that thing, it would be even better.
It's almost like you're turning it into more of a problem-solving issue rather than a sticky to you.
Yeah. Well, and really, it is, in all of this, there's a book. So I've gotten most of this material out of two books. One is a book called Crucial Conversations, and the other one is a book called Tribal Leadership. And tribal leadership has two key principles to it, and is one of the principles is about building relationships, and the second principle is about using language, right? So language comes into play, and it's about how do you get your groups or your tribes to move from one level of productivity to another level of productivity, to a higher level of productivity, and it is the language of inspiration. It is the language that we use when we want to have groups move to a higher level, and it is the language of success. In order for us to do it, we have to think carefully about the words that we choose when we're talking to people and trying to help them to grow. I'll give you an example. If I say to my son, I'm really disappointed in you, Chris, what might he hear? Pardon? He's a failure? Okay. I don't love him. There's a lot of things. I mean, it opens up that vulnerability piece in him, and it is a simple word, right? Disappointment. But we have to understand that there are words that have power. And disappointment is a word that has power. The way we use that word has power. The context in which we use it has power. The timing, the tone, all of that stuff has power. I could use the exact same word and help create a very different feeling in Chris. Chris, I'm really disappointed when you don't do your homework and you come back with these bad grades. It's kind of like the you versus I thing. It's not ripping him apart. It's identifying a specific issue that I want to address with him. Makes a world of difference, and it makes a world of difference in this way. We hear words at a conscious level. To some degree, we interpret words at a conscious level, but in a much greater way, we interpret language and words at a subconscious level. It's like the use of sarcasm, right? Sarcasm, we often use it humorously. And there are absolutely appropriate times to use sarcastic humor. If you have great relationships with each other, and we as guys tend to bust each other's balls, right? Excuse the language. It's okay in some of those circumstances, but the sarcastic humor oftentimes comes at a price. And it comes at a price of the person receiving the sarcasm. And we think that's it. But the reality is, it comes at the price of the person who gives it as well. And it's just not a conscious price. It is a price that begins to develop into patterns. And those patterns begin to develop into relationship destroyers. Right? Because anytime you're using it in a way that you're throwing a little bit of a dart, eventually it's like the straw. Right? Keep piling the straw on, you keep piling the straw on, you keep piling the straw on. At some point, the camel's back breaks. We're getting close to a time, and I want to leave a couple minutes for questions here. So I've got a bunch of different models here and some very simple tools, these three things. I want to talk about this, and I want to tie it back to what we were talking about, the gambling process up front. And I want to tie it back to some decisions that you have to make and think about in your desire or want to build relationships through better communication, more effective communication, or to essentially destroy relationships or begin to tear them down. C stands for choice. None of this happens. You don't get better unless you choose to get better. So it requires you to make a choice. Another C is, if you don't care, you're probably not going to make the choice. So it requires that you care. R is risk. And risk is understanding who you are, how you act, how you think, and what impact it has on other people. It also says in this, R stands for responsibility. I don't care who you are, if you are in a relationship with someone, you have a responsibility, your responsibility. And whether they meet theirs or not has nothing to do with whether you meet yours or not. You can't use them as a scapegoat for not making sure you take care of your responsibility. A is awareness. Self-awareness, awareness of your impact on other people. And I'll use it in this framework, knowledge. When you learn something, you cannot unlearn it. It's there. Whether you use it or not is a totally different matter. P is practice. And with any skill, whether it's rolling the dice, playing cards, shooting bows and arrows, with any skills, in order to get really, really good at it, you have to practice. And where it ties back into this, the more you practice, there's risk involved with that. Right? And here's the last tool that this is success, and we'll talk about more about that in just a second. The last tool is permission giving. Permission giving is a physical, verbal, out loud thing that would be good for you to use with people you're in a relationship with. Ed, I give you permission to give me feedback. Not only do I give you permission to give me feedback, I give you permission to give me feedback poorly. In the moment, however you have to say it. And here's what I'll do. I will try to sort through the emotion and understand that you're trying to give me something that's very valuable. And we'll look at and figure out what's going on underneath there that needs to get better. What I'd like for you to do is to give me permission too. And permission doesn't mean, once we've given each other permission, doesn't mean we can stay badly all the time. Permission says we understand that in a moment of heat, something may happen. But that's not, in general, how we want to do it. Now, this last one is S. Whatever your definition of success is, power, money, wealth, influence, the better you get at communication, the greater your chance of being successful in any of those things. Don't forget that there's risk involved with that. I don't have this up, but there's a piece here, and I'll end it with this. There are two verses that I came up on in the Bible. One is Matthew 15 and 11. The other is Ephesians 4:29, and I'll read them both, and we'll be done. Listen and understand, is Matthew. What goes into someone's mouth does not defile them. What comes out of their mouth is what defiles them. You have a choice. The second thing, Ephesians 4:29, do not let unwholesome talk come out of your mouth, but only what is helpful in building others up according to their needs. And the way I look at it, in relationships with each other, part of my responsibility, not yours, is to help build you up and help make you more successful. That's my responsibility, and that's the choice that I make. Thanks for your time. Questions, comments, concerns?
Yeah, the safety, bringing safety into CREP to try to allow for this conversation to continue on, is there other tools of that you can, or is there other ways to provide that?
Ed, what I'm about to tell you is going to be really risky. It's probably going to be really risky for you, and I know it's really risky for me, because I'm not sure that I'm going to tell you in a way that you're able to hear it. What I really appreciate is if you give me a chance to tell you, and I'll try to do it the best way I can, but when I'm done, let's talk about it and see if there's a way I can do it better.
So you're putting it on yourself or something?
Right. Are you okay with that? Can we try that? Without ever saying, I'm giving you permission or you're giving me permission, I just gave you permission. And I just ask for your permission. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Other question?
I didn't hear the word trust throughout the delivery, but I would have to imagine the permission giving some of the other qualities up here. The level of trust has to be incredibly high.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk about that for a really quick second. When you've lost trust, it's really hard to get it back, right? It takes tremendous risk on your part and the other person's part for them to trust you again. You have to be willing to do what you have to do, and it's patterns, it's developed, it's all of the tools and stuff. You have to be able to think about the language of success and use it consistently over a long period of time for people to get back up to that level of trust. It's possible. I believe it's absolutely possible. I've come really close to breaking and losing trust a couple of really significant times in my life and had to work at it really hard, but it's possible for it to come back. Anybody else? Oh, Bruce. Crucial conversations. For me, it is the best interpersonal skill book that I have read. I'd strongly recommend it. There are a number of authors to it, otherwise I'd tell you the authors.
You need the second book too.
Tribal Leadership. Tribal Leadership is actually a very quick read. It's a business book. But the principles in it about building relationships and about the language, for me, that's where I got the language of success. How do we do that in a way? Carefully thinking about what we say to build as opposed to tear apart. Thanks, guys. Appreciate your time.